Hello, and welcome to the College Financial Lady podcast. I'm Anne Garcia, a fee-only financial advisor at Independent Progressive Advisors in Portland, Oregon, and author of the College Financial Lady blog. Today, I'm speaking with Scott Clyburn about what's going on in the world of testing. Scott is the founder and director of North Avenue Education, a tutoring and mentoring service that empowers students to take charge of their learning. Scott earned his BA from the University of Virginia and his MA from Yale, so he spent plenty of time in college himself. He's taught both secondary and higher education and has been tutoring professionally since 2005. Like many tutoring services working with high school students, North Avenue and Scott focus quite a bit on college admissions testing. Scott, welcome, and thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much, Anne. I'm really excited to be here.
Excellent. Let's get started with some basics. Test optional has been a big topic this past year, and test blind a lesser one. Can you please explain what each of those means and specifically what they mean for students?
Absolutely. Yeah, I find that many students and many parents, when they speak to us about admissions and test optional, they tend to conflate these two terms. So it's important for families to get a handle on what they mean and how they're different. So the more popular of the two policies is test optional. Test optional did have did experience some growth pre-pandemic, but during the past 14 months or so, that growth has really been accelerated by the lack of testing access. So test optional essentially means that a college or university will allow you to submit your test score results if you choose to do so. And if you do submit those, they will use those results in their review of your application. Test blind means they are not interested in seeing those results, even if you took the test and did well. So if you submit your score results, they will actively obscure those or hide those results from the admissions team so that they can review all students without those results whatsoever. So test blind, it really represents just a handful of schools. It did add a few more proponents during the pandemic, but that number of schools is still kind of under the 50 mark. Whereas test optional, I think the number of truly test optional schools beyond the pandemic has increased to something over 300. During the pandemic, for temporary test optional policies, it's over 1,000.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it seems from the admission cycle that's just wrapping up now that test optional was making admissions quite a bit more competitive, just given that students were applying to, students were considering schools they might not have had they not been test optional. Does this mean that students with good test scores will be, better served by submitting them? And I'm thinking about this both from the perspective of admissions and then also, merit aid, which so often is driven by test scores.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. There's a lot there that we can unpack. Let me start with just the competitiveness of this past year's admission cycle. So because of the test optional policies that many schools implemented temporarily, even the most selective schools like, MIT, UPenn, Harvard, a lot of students kind of thought to themselves, well, hey, if prior to the pandemic, looking at those school statistics, I might have discounted myself from being a competitor in the applicant pool. Now that I don't have to submit my test scores, maybe I'm a bit more competitive and I'll apply to that. So what we saw over the past year, over the past admission cycle, is that a lot of students applied to a lot more schools than they would have otherwise. So I think the Common App said that the average is 5 to 10 in a normal year. And this past year, per applicant, it was like 15 to 20 schools that kids were applying to. Yeah. Harvard saw their applications go up by 43%. University of Georgia even was 40%. So that's, in other words, a lot of schools were just inundated with these applications. And so if they were test optional, what they had to do, what they had to decide is how were they going to fairly and in a balanced way review these two populations of students, those who submitted their scores and those who did not. And I think that, it really depends on the institutional priorities. For some schools, they thought, hey, test scores are valuable. They really value the academic abilities of students. And so, for students who submit those and if those scores are competitive, we're going to essentially reward those students with admission at a higher rate than the students who didn't submit. Another way to think about that is it might be the case that even if it's not an institutional priority to preference scores, the schools may have been so inundated with non-submitters that just the admit rate for that pool was way lower. So I was looking at some data recently at Fordham and Georgetown and UPenn, and it looks like in some cases, like at UPenn, you were twice as likely to get in. And this is just ED data. A lot of these schools haven't released their regular decision data, so it's a different sort of population altogether. But if at UPenn, at least, you were twice as likely to get in if you submitted scores than if you didn't.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But I also find that, so one of the things I find interesting, like comparing my children's high school experience to my own is, you know, when I went to high school, standardized tests seemed like they were important from the perspective of knowing that, you know, a student who had straight A's at Sunset High School was doing comparable work to a student with straight A's at Lincoln High School. But now with, you know, AP and IB being so widespread, particularly at the, you know, at the top schools where most applicants coming in have taken a pretty standardized, you know, they've taken all the same classes that are subject to all the same, you know, benchmarks and rubrics and, you know, and grading standards than they were for my generation. So, you know, for students like those, it almost seems like, yeah, the test scores are probably less indicative or less necessary to evaluate them. So it's interesting to hear that those are the places that are actually being, you know, that actually were more selective with when it comes to people actually submitting test scores.
Yeah, and I think that's a function of the other schools that those students are applying to as well. I mean, if you're a student on the East Coast, you're probably applying to a lot of those highly selective schools, not all of whom will see eye to eye on the value of scores, right? So even if you're applying to a place like Wake Forest that's been test optional for years, you might still send your scores because you're also applying to University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, which traditionally does require scores. So I think there's a lot to be said for the kinds of schools that students are applying to. And so families would be wise as they craft their college list to do their research early and make sure that they understand if they're applying to different kinds of schools that those different schools might want different things, want to see different things highlighted in the application.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you or did North Avenue see a difference in the profile of schools that students were applying to this year, you know, because of things being test optional?
I definitely think that, we saw two things happen. One was students did apply to a wider range and generally a higher caliber of school than they had applied to in the past. And again, that's a function of the test optional policies. They thought, hey, maybe I'm competitive with just my GPA alone. And if I don't have to submit the test scores. But then the other interesting trend was that I found students, they did apply to more schools overall, but they also, they tended to say things like, well, but I'll probably stay close to home. you know, I think there was kind of a general, and this is obviously peak pandemic when they were crafting their college lists last summer and fall. So they were thinking, well, maybe I'll go to California, but you know, if my parents get sick, I'm going to want to be within driving distance. So I'm not going to go to Southern California. I'll go to Northern California, or maybe I'll take more seriously how valuable it is to be at a place like University of Oregon Honors. You know, so kind of stayed a little bit more regional, I noticed.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I hear that from parents as well, that there, you know, there've been much, much greater level of concern about sending kids far from home. So, you know, given all that's changing these days and will continue to change as the, you know, as the world evolves, what kinds of recommendations are you giving students and families about testing these days?
Yeah. So one of the great things that's happening right now is that a lot of schools, public and private, are trying really hard to administer official SATs and ACTs on their campuses. They realize that because of the past year and the access to testing has been really limited, but they realize the value of these scores for a lot of students. and for a lot of schools, they're attempting to host these tests on their own campuses during the school day, during the school week, to give students an opportunity to secure a set of scores if they choose. So we have, in this month, we have a couple of test dates, April 13th and April 27th, where the SAT is going to be given at a lot of Portland and Beaverton area schools. So I think that for students at those schools, it's really wise to take advantage of these opportunities and prepare and study for those tests so that if you get a school or score rather that you're pleased with or that you believe will be competitive at the kinds of schools you hope to apply to in the fall, that you're really making the most of that opportunity. You don't have to take it again. Yeah. And then for students who don't happen to go to one of those schools that's offering an in-school day test, there is a rising number of test sites over the next few months. We have a May SAT and a June SAT and an ACT, and then another ACT in July. And we're seeing that both College Board and ACT are actively attempting to add test mm-hmm. sites because they realize that even in January and February and March, there was more cancellations. So there's expanded access to testing. We believe that if students' baseline test scores, their baseline SAT or ACT, are within about a standard deviation of a competitive score at the kinds of schools they're looking to apply, that it's probably worth preparing and studying and attempting to get that score into that range. Mm-hmm. So for SAT, the standard deviation is about 210 points. And for ACT, it's about 4 or 5 points.
Interesting. Yeah. So it sounds like there's no downside to taking the tests right now, where, you know, in the old days when tests were required and often you were required to submit every score that you've gotten, it could really hurt you in the process. But now if you get a good score, you submit it. And if you don't, you don't.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, even a few years ago, schools stopped requiring students to submit every score that they achieved, right? So there was this idea of super scoring or picking and choosing your best score. So that trend has continued in the pandemic, and test optional kind of represents that philosophy to, you know, an exponential degree. Yeah. you can submit your score if you like it, and if you don't, you don't have to. So the pressure's off.
Yeah. Well, you know, and getting back to your earlier point about the schools having lower admit rates for non-submitters, is there a concern that, you know, if you don't submit scores, it's because they weren't good?
You know, I did read a really interesting article. You and I have spoken before about Jeff Salingo, his book, Who Gets In and Why, but he wrote this article for the Chronicle of Higher Ed called The New Enrollment Playbook. And he talked a lot about how in his conversations with college admissions officers, they would say things like, once you see a score, you can't unsee it. and so this idea of like, well, you know, don't submit it if it's not competitive, I think is true. It's out there. And so students do need to do their due diligence in understanding what is going to be a competitive score at a certain school. But I think one of the things that we tell students as well is that test scores are a bit more fungible or a bit more easy to change and alter and improve than GPAs, which are cumulative and often pretty fixed by the time you're, you know, a first semester senior.
Yeah.
you can't really change much about that number, right? Mm-hmm. Even the weighted unweighted, the classes you took are the classes you took. You can't really, you know, presenting it one way over another doesn't really help you. But your test score, in a matter of 3 or 6 months, you can drastically improve that metric, and that can reflect, you know, much more positively on you as an applicant.
Yeah, well, and they're often such a big piece of merit aid, and even and used in interesting ways. I mean, my daughter's college has been test optional for a few years, and they don't offer any merit aid except for national merit. Mm-hmm. So if you're national mm-hmm. merit, you automatically get a scholarship at this college, which is test optional.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And offers no other merit aids. So
yeah, and that's a privileged position to be in, to not offer any other merit aid. Most schools are not in that position. And so they have to use metrics that are easy to sort students by, like test scores and GPA, to award that coveted, you know, pot of merit aid and scholarship yeah. funds.
And I think one of the things that families overlook so much in the admissions process is So much of what we hear about admissions is what Harvard and Stanford and the UC schools are doing and whatnot. The vast majority of schools, however, are actively trying to fill their freshman class every year. And so they're looking in many cases for reasons to give people merit scholarships. And so tests to me are just, you know, one more opportunity for, you know, for students to shine in a way that leads a school to give them some money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a great article on Inside Higher Ed a few weeks ago about how those, the IBs and the big research flagship universities are really driving the story on admissions during the pandemic. But to get the full story, you really have to look at some of these other schools that are, like you said, really struggling to enroll students and looking for opportunities to entice students to come. And Merit Aid has always been one of those carrots that schools have used to say, hey, you know, you're a really competitive student. We think you'd really shine and thrive on our campus. Please give us a serious look, and we want to make that a sweeter deal for you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a parent of a kid who really benefited from standardized testing. You know, my son's test scores were vastly better than his GPA. And now he's kicking butt in college. He's a 4.0 student. He was invited to the Honors College. He's tutoring statistics. I mean, he's all this stuff that was not his profile in high school. And, you know, admissions people will tell you this isn't a common situation, that grades are far more predictive of college success than our test scores. I'm not sure that's as true as they say. And honestly, you know, if they don't believe that that's true, then they probably aren't admitting kids like my son anyway. You know, our experience was that and I have, you know, I have twins, so I had two of them, but, you know, both of my kids were tracked into programs for highly gifted students when they came out of elementary school and then went into middle school. And then that middle school program landed them in accelerated classes in high school. And I think this is very, very typical for students that at a very young age, they're tracked into certain classes. And then they land in this place in high school. And that was great for one of my kids, but, you know, for my daughter, it was terrific to be in all of those advanced classes, but my son really struggled with the workload in high school and he really quickly got behind and got frustrated. I'm curious if you, because to me, I'm like, well, that was 50% of my kids. you know, is this a typical experience at all? Because I mean, to me, his test scores created an opportunity that he wouldn't have had without them. And it's really given him an opportunity to shine.
Absolutely. We see that regularly, especially with boys, I would say that they tend to occupy that late bloomer category where, you know, the first semester or even three semesters of high school are not as accurate of an indicator of their academic potential as the last few semesters or even as their test scores. I was part of that group. I didn't think school was that valuable or interesting until I got into some really challenging coursework toward the end of my high school career. And I was really thankful to have test scores that vouched for that that aptitude and that academic promise that my GPA didn't really convey. So I think that's why schools are reluctant to jump into the test blind category. I think they understand that GPA and test scores represent really two different metrics that kind of capture equally, maybe not equally, because they'll often say, well, GPA is more important, but comparatively valid and important insights about a high school student. They often say, or that the research often says that, you know, GPA alone is a better predictor than SAT or ACT scores of college performance, but together they are a better predictor than either alone. And I think admissions officers realize that, and that's why they want to hold on to the test scores as a way to, you know, essentially help sort in these students for whom a GPA alone maybe isn't the best indicator of success, but a GPA plus a test score tells a different story altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I look at the testing landscape, I see a lot of upsides in test optional. You know, it gets a it gets a broader range of students looking at a broader range of schools, and a lot, you know, taking standardized tests is not necessarily a life skill that, that's going to get you mm-hmm. anywhere other than into, you know, into college or, you know, get you credit for classes you took in high school. But, so, you know, I feel like on the one hand, there are definitely some benefits to, you know, a lot of benefits to test optional, but I'm sure there are some downsides, as well. How do you see that?
Yeah. I do think that it, on the whole, it's a positive movement, and I'm appreciative of the reorienting, role that it's playing. I feel like tests were a big driver of that, you know, admissions arms race mentality mm-hmm. that probably started in the 90s and just got more and more exacerbated as admission rates went down in the first two decades of this century. So I'm grateful that I think a lot of folks in the industry, admissions and on the college side, and even on the tutoring and test prep side are kind of taking that seriously and saying, man, a lot of the students that we engage with have severe anxiety. They view this as a really stressful process. How can we kind of take that down a notch and make it a bit more, just manageable and pleasant and affirming and encouraging to students. So I definitely think that test optional is a positive movement or force for good overall. I do think that a word of caution that I would issue to families and parents is first to not conflate test optional with test blind. If a school is accepting scores, if a school acknowledges that they will look at your scores and judge you on the basis of the scores, then they believe there's something valuable about those scores. And I also think that I've seen a lot of positive growth in my students who prepare for the SAT. You know, maybe it's in the realm of grammar and English and writing, and you know, they've never been held accountable to really reinforcing some of these good habits that they learned in middle school and high school until they got to the SAT and they were so motivated to internalize those punctuation rules or, you know, understand concepts like transition phrases or topic sentences to a degree that they really never had to for their coursework, right? So I think that there is a good in confronting a difficult and challenging feat like a standardized test and using it as an opportunity to really reinforce and solidify some of the things that we know that they'll benefit from taking with them into college.
Yeah. I always thought doing crossword puzzles was the best test prep.
You know, I haven't assigned that for homework yet, but
that's what I did to prepare for the GRE.
Oh man. Do you like any particular writer like Will Shortz, the New York Times?
I do the New York Times now, but when I was in college and doing it for the GRE, I just did whatever was in our local paper.
Yeah.
And I will say I got a good SAT score, but not having done crossword puzzles and having done standard test prep. And when it came to the GRE, I only missed one question.
On the verbal?
On the entire test.
Whoa.
So
that is impressive.
So, and the only difference was that I did crossword puzzles for the GRE as my only prep. Yeah. But I think it gets at what you're saying. It forces a discipline and a logic, you know, matching word tenses, matching, you know, singular versus plural, you know, understanding word roots, you know, all of those sort of the sort of less appreciated skills that are nonetheless helpful, you know, both in your academic career and as a test taker.
Yeah, I think to come back to your son, there's a lot of skills that are helpful for doing well in high school that don't necessarily have a lot to do with content mastery or coursework. You know, there are things like being a pleasant to your teachers and being, you know, highly organized and having meticulous notes and things like that, that, you know, they do support academic performance, but they're not equivalent to academic performance. And I think standardized testing is the same thing. There are some things that don't necessarily or align with, you know, something that you're going to do in college on a day-to-day basis, but there's also some other things that are important too, like understanding how to manage your time, disciplining yourself to memorize a set of facts or formulas that you may not use in your college courses, but that nonetheless, the ability to discipline yourself and complete that task is representative of something like resilience or perseverance, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really great way to put it. Well, Scott, this has been so helpful. I mean, I think just, you know, by way of wrapping up, the things that I'm taking away from this conversation are, you know, test optional and test blind are here to stay, but mm-hmm. students will benefit from taking, or at a minimum, students have nothing to lose and the possibility of a lot to gain from taking and preparing for the tests. You know, that test optional does open a lot of doors to different experience, different applications, you know, different ways for students to be able to shine. But you and I both seem to think that tests are not going away anytime soon.
Absolutely. And it's a student by student basis. You know, it'll benefit some students more than others. So it's something that families really have to kind of dig into and understand on an individual basis for their kid.
Excellent. Well, any final words of wisdom?
I would say that the best thing that students can do for success on tests is to start reading often and early. That's one of the things that
Call of Duty doesn't help.
No. Well, to some degree, I believe, you know, the visual, the, you know, hand-eye coordination helps. But yeah, if you have a student who's looking at standardized testing over the next few years, make sure they're reading.
And doing crossword puzzles.
And doing crossword puzzles.
All right, Scott. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for the invitation, Anne. It's been a pleasure.
And you've been listening to the College Financial Lady podcast. Thanks for joining us.